My next guest has been called many things, most of them flattering. He's a professor of English literature and poetry at the University of Toronto. He's written several very influential books, The Mechanical Bride and Understanding Media and The Extension of Man and the Gutenberg Galaxy, and a new one called From Cliché to Archetype. His thoughts on the use of television were circulated to members of Richard Nixon's staff during the 1968 presidential campaign. So for that alone, he's had an impact. And he coined the phrase, the medium is the message, which a lot of people toss around, like myself, and assume they understand, and I'm not sure I do. Would you welcome, please, the author of that new book and a prophet of the electronic revolution, Mr. Marshall McLuhan.
Fascinated by Mr. Hurt's performance.
You were.
And I wanted to ask him right off, is there any relation between the rhythms of the English language and your trumpet? Do you talk?
I would think so.
It has a definite relation to the English language.
I think so, sir, yes.
I was asking James Brown a while back, could he sing in any other language? And the answer is no. Now, I'm very puzzled. Why should New Orleans, why should the South produce so much of the rhythm and blues that has dominated the world since radio, since jazz, and now rock? Why does it come out of the English Cockney world and the Liverpool Irish world? Why does it come out of these strange areas of speech? Is there a profound relation between music and speech?
Gee, you're very easy to interview.
I don't think... Mr. Capote perhaps have an opinion about this?
Well, I have a theory about what you're saying, which is the whole blues jazz thing. Of course, it belongs to the Negro culture, and that which originates in the South. Yes, it does. And yep. the Beatles and the whole English thing is merely a transference of Southern Negro jazz blues culture into a British medium. There's nothing particularly essentially British about the Beatles or the Rolling Stones at all. In fact, they'd be the first people to admit that everything comes basically from American
artists. Difficult to do it in
artists.
French.
I think so.
Yeah. Very difficult to do it in Russian or French. It's English rhythm.
Have you heard the record of Hair done in French?
No.
I mean, they...
No, I haven't.
It sounds exactly like Hair.
Yeah.
Hair.
Does that refute your theory?
It isn't a theory. I'm inquiring, is there a relation between song and the spoken word? And it's a puzzler that so much American music comes up from the South. You think it's Negro?
Yes, essentially. Mm-hmm.
You say that as if there could be no argument against that.
No,
I've never heard of one. Is there not?
Is there an argument? Negro could be dance as much as speech.
But it's music that you're talking about. Mm. Music and speech combined, and there's no question about music, speech, and rhythm being essentially a Negro culture as developed in this country.
You feel that the Negro has profoundly influenced Southern speech?
Well, I think it's the only thing that contributed anything to... Well, no. I think a certain kind of Elizabethan English. Elizabethan English contributed most to Southern speech.
It's an old dialect form.
You can go to Kentucky to this very day and hear people speak in a curious dialect that's almost exactly Elizabethan English.
Mm-hmm. Have you learned anything so far?
Yes, I'm very interested because to me, I'm an explorer, a prober. I'm not. I don't move in with theories. I just probe.
Yeah, that's sort of maddening in reading you. I'm one of those people who, when I read you, I find that I get lost a lot, and then suddenly there's a flash of lightning. Maybe you're tired of hearing that reaction to your
understanding
reading.
Is not a point of view. Understanding is probe and doesn't lead to any conclusions
or
value judgments.
Uh-huh. But you did say once that you don't necessarily agree with your conclusions, so you must have some.
Because if you're merely probing, you never know what you're going to discover. As you say, flash awareness.
Yeah.
And so I'm delighted to have an opportunity to broach these subjects in a group like this. And I'm not wanting to take over the show. You go ahead.
Oh, you weren't, nor were you accused of that. You know, maybe I can't ask you this thing then that I've thought of asking you, because you know the subject it has been around for a long time of his television damaging. Can it be hurting people? And you have said brilliant things about television and caused everybody to stop and think about it, politicians and everyone. And yet I would like to ask you then, if you do have a private opinion on the subject of, is television possibly discouraging something that's very valuable? Do you privately feel that perhaps it is, for example, killing conversation, making it impossible
TV
for people?
TV makes possible talk shows.
It makes talk shows possible.
It demands audience participation. You cannot have a TV show without an audience.
But they don't do any of the talking. They sit there and
they participate the way they do in football, and without a public, there is no game.
Mm-hmm.
In an empty stadium, you have a practice. You don't have a game going at all.
Mm-hmm.
So without a TV audience, there is no show. The audience participation is part of the TV medium.
But it isn't a participation that they have with other people, is it?
I mean, well, both.
It's possible that they have...
Remember, TV goes right into the human nervous system. It goes right into the midriff.
Yeah.
The image pours right off that tube into the nerves. It's an inner trip. The TV viewer is stoned. Yeah. It's addictive, like your show.
Yeah. But things that addict people have a bad effect on them many times.
No. You can be addicted to quite benign and delightful things.
Sure. Sure.
Conversation included.
But then would you say that it is your opinion that it is not... There is no real negative effect of television on the mass public, even though a lot of people are rather worried about it.
Insofar as it tends to be an inner trip, certainly deprives people of outer goals.
Uh-huh.
And motivation toward outer goals. It drives people inward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is unlike the movie, which drove people outward. But TV, insofar as it drives people inward, is driving us in the direction of the Eastern world.
Mm-hmm.
And just as the East goes west, we go east. And this is revolutionary in the extreme. It also deprives the Westerner of much of his private identity. And this is very upsetting to many people. The loss of identity is very disturbing. They prefer, more and more people prefer this group orientation of the sort of, well, the sound light shows and the sense of togetherness.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And what do you think that feeling is when sometimes you have maybe an hour to spend in the house and you don't want to turn the television on because it kind of changes your consciousness? It's a little like when you come out of a movie. You can't really talk for a while.
Well, strange, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've noticed people come out of the show, they're rather numb.
Yeah.
When they walk out of a show, there's very little conversation.
Yeah.
They seem to be abstracted, wafted off into a world of private experience. I think TV tends to be more social and less isolating than the movie. The movie tends to the world of the private dream.
It's funny that we wouldn't believe it, but we were talking about the subject of a beard while we were away, and I'm wondering if the sort of vague discomfort that I feel has to do with feeling that I'm not sure it's me sitting here.
You're afraid you're putting on the public?
That may be it.
Or
I don't know.
Taking him off. There is a strange expression, you know, you're taking me off, you're putting me on.
And they both mean the same thing.
They both mean the same thing.
Yeah. How can they be the same thing and be opposite?
Baudelaire put it in that famous phrase of his, hypocrite lecteur, mon semblable mon frère.
Yeah.
Hypocrite, the hypocrite is a man who wears a mask, puts on a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And Baudelaire said, the reader is putting on my poetry and I'm putting on the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's putting on and taking off. It's consuming and producing simultaneously. Mm-hmm. There are reciprocal relationships. But it's fun and games. This is the important thing. It is a process in which you play. TV demands play. Hence dialogue and interplay. It's not a solitary monologue medium, and that's why people with a merely private image have difficulty relating to it.
I don't think of any politician who has a beard. I've just thought. I can't think of one. Could you repeat for a moment your evaluation of the Nixon Kennedy debates because it seemed to. Say a lot about the media, as you understand it, what television can do for one person and not for another.
It seems rather remote, but...
It's a little far back,
isn't it? People who heard the Nixon-Kennedy debates on radio were amazed that anybody could have any doubt about who was superior. On radio, Nixon sounded infinitely superior to Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people I knew actually heard the debates first on radio, not on TV.
I didn't know that, yeah.
And so radio is a hot private medium, is it, by comparison with TV, and there's no comparison. Nixon is a superior in that form. Mm-hmm. In the private debate mode, there's the carrying the private point of view and the private point right through, he has it. But in putting on the public, which is a corporate act of play and participation, it's very difficult for a very well-defined private image to get with it. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult thing to put on a public until you're prepared to play, as you are doing with your mask.
A mask.
You're putting on a mask, which is corporate, and role-playing. It's not a private goal. You see, when you put on a mask, you're no longer seeking a private goal. It's if you put on a little masquerade mask like this, it means you're prepared to play fun and games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's corporate and festive. And it's
what do you mean
it's
corporate?
Well, it's the difference. For example, a motorcycle cop has a costume, whereas the street cop merely has a uniform. And the kids will imitate the motorcycle cop as an easy rider, as a man in a role, but they shun this private, dressed bureaucrat, the job holder. To him, he's repelled. To them, the TV generation of kids will go with the mask, the image, and the play, but the merely private job holder to them is alien. And they feel absolutely repelled by this image of the private bureaucrat with his rule book and his pencil. Whereas the Cyclops, the motorcycle cop, is a costume wearer, role player, involved corporate. And yes, not private.
Yeah.
You see? So it's like the mini. The mini skirt is a tribal corporate costume, powerful. The midi is merely a private dress. It's not corporate. And this is the mystery of the mini and the midi. The mini is a tribal costume worn by all primitive societies, men and women alike, whereas the midi is merely a private dress which is subject to fashion. The mini is not fashionable. It isn't subject to change. It is a role.
I hope not.
No, it's a... Of course,
anyway.
Some people think the end is in sight.
Oh, please. Say, my mind is about four beats behind because I thought I see a contradiction now in something you said. You said that Mr. Nixon's more effective on radio, that by adding television, in fact, something is lost, paradoxically, you might say. But then they used television, presumably, to elect him this time. Why was it effective in that case?
Not sure that it was. I'm not a very suitable person to discuss this matter as a Canadian,
mm-hmm.
An outsider. Trudeau happens to be one of the most superb TV images in the world, better than De Gaulle, who was pure cartoon. Now, De Gaulle was a superb TV image because he didn't have a private face, he just was a cartoon.
That's right.
A cartoon is tactile, and TV is not a visual medium. It is tactile. That's why whiskers are very good on TV. They're friendly to the sense of touch. Mr. Hertz's instrument with the resonant interval is profoundly good TV because TV is an audible tactile mode which demands that resonant interval, touch. So when I saw your fingers dancing up and down on that trumpet, I realized that you had a complete natural relation to the TV medium because of this interval of resonance, which is the TV form. TV is not a pictorial medium at all. It is a medium of odd-dial tactile resonance.
You've said then that somebody who has a blurred image, in a sense, I think you talked about John Kennedy this way, that his image was not quite as vivid as Mr. Nixon's.
It's not photographic.
And in one sense, that made the viewers come to him more.
They felt more involved and more related to that rather shaggy image.
Mm-hmm.
But a sharply defined pictorial image is not good TV.
How can I use the medium better, Mr. McLuhan?
I think you're doing
superbly.
I think you're doing superbly. You don't have to be told.
Am I hot, cool, or just right?
I think you're right with it.
Oh, you do?
Right on is the phrase, isn't it?
That
right
seems
on.
To be a,
right on.
And we are on right now.
And right on.
Right on, put on, and taken off. Oh, there's a lot going on here. Ideas go off in all directions when Marshall McLuhan is here. We got on instant playback just now before we came back.
I thought that Mr. Sayers would be an ideal person to have a word about the effect of the instant TV playback on the football game.
Well, I think it's made TV watching more people watch the game now because they can see the instant playback. They can see blocks they didn't see. And this has put a lot of focus on the line play where they see the great backs run and the quarterbacks run, but now they're watching the great blocks thrown by the lineman.
And this makes the audience more participative in the game.
No question about it. It does.
That's what we were talking about, to see the talk show, audience participation and dialogue.
Yeah, I'm just not sure they participate in a way that's good, but that's a moral question, isn't it?
They feel the need to get in there, and they'd like to be participating in the talk once the dialogue gets going.
They feel they know you from television.
Yeah.
You know, that brings us to the subject of Jack Parr, whom I know. There's something about Jack Parr that's never been explained that made him, in some way, the most interesting person who's ever been on television. Whether you liked him or not, and people who say, I watched him, then he irritate me. But I still think he's the most interesting person who was on television, they will say. What did television fail to screen out from Jack Parr that made him get to people more than other people have?
I don't know whether it had something to do with his fondness for the humor as a means of participation. But one of the things that most people don't understand about jokes is that they're all grievances.
Grievances.
Every joke is a grievance. It's a very useful line to use anywhere because there's a great silence falls while everybody thinks of a joke that is not a grievance.
I was doing that.
And it's not easy. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter where you dip in. In Canada, we use jokes about the French Canadians,
mm-hmm.
bilingualism, and about newfies. In the newfies are like the Polacks and the Italian jokes, loaded with a kind of condescension. For example, the newfies have recently made a great scientific breakthrough, the first hernia transplant. And this is like the East Berlin jokes about the Russians.
Wait, the audience isn't through grieving.
In East Berlin, they tell about the great Russian breakthrough in science. They have crossed glowworms and body lice, and now everybody in the Russia can now read Pravda at night in bed.
Oh, that's the worst joke
glowworms,
ever.
Glowworms and body lice. Well, now, these grievance jokes are all ways of getting rid of animus. And when jokes stop, then people are not getting rid of their grievances.
I used to do a line in my act that I went to a wedding where the bride was pregnant and they threw puffed rice. Where is the grievance there, or is it so obvious that I...
It's a part of... It's just in the pun itself, which most people find very grievous.
They do, yeah. You know this great nostalgia for radio?
Ah.
Would there have been a great nostalgia for television if it had been invented?
This is the cliché archetype theme. Notice how TV went around the movies and scrapped them, and then retrieved the silence, and retrieved the old movies as art forms.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cliché archetype theme. That new cliché or surround will retrieve old cliché. So that when the satellites go around the planet, they scrap the planet and turn the planet into an art form which becomes ecological.
Wow.
Yeah. So the moment Sputnik went around the planet, everybody said, ecology, that's it. Until then, the word ecology had never occurred. But as soon as the planet went inside, a satellite surround, everybody said, ecology. It's the next. And planet Pluto waited for the attentions of the ecologist after the garbage apocalypse of the surround. Planet Pluto became a need of the attention of the ecologist.
Yeah.
But our planet became art form, and so this is the cliché archetype thing that I talk about. Movies get retrieved, old movies come surging up with the new surround of TV. And movies are now accepted seriously as art form. Stuff that had been considered trash in its day is now taken very seriously.
You don't think that a movie can be an art form?
Oh, it is an art form, yeah. But people formerly had classified it as trash, just as they do most TV shows.
Uh-huh.
Now, what will surround TV to turn TV into an art form? Something. Is waiting in the wings. Maybe it's holograph.
I'm afraid to look. Can I ask you something, Mr. McLuhan? If you run into an average person sitting on the subway, can you have a conversation with them that...
Yeah.
That...
It's usually the advertisement overhead will suggest some comic bond.
Uh-huh.
And there isn't an ad in the subway that isn't good for hours of conversation.
Okay. I'm sorry, I have not called you Dr. McLuhan once, and that's your proper title, isn't it?
No, I very seldom have that hurled at me.
All right.
But it's a misguided muscle.
Misguided muscle? Thank you, Marshall McLuhan, for being here. Mr. Sayers, Mr. Hurt, Mr. Capote, we have run out of time, which means that we should stop at this point. We'll see you tomorrow night, and good night.